CJSF 90.1 in Burnaby, British Columbia, broadcasting from the unceded territories of the Coast Salish peoples.
You're listening to CJSF Radio, Simon Fraser, 90.1 FM.
You are listening to CJSF 90.1 FM on your dial, 93.9 Cable FM in Burnaby. And you are listening to Future Talk with your host, Dr. Paul Tenery, professional engineer, professional futurist, and sometimes occasional sessional instructor of future studies at Simon Fraser University. And this is a weekly show that looks at future trends and issues and important items that affect your daily life and will be affecting your life into the future. Welcome to the show. We're continuing our look at the book, The Mind of the CEO by Jeffrey E. Garten. Last show, we were looking at the next internet wars. The international reach, knowledge, and experience of the giant multinationals has given them unmatched capabilities to develop products and services and to sell them around the world. It ought to give them advantages of finding talent where others cannot. Their global reach, the costs of which could be spread across enormous base of operations, should position them in the forefront of innovation. Big companies also have assets to take significant risks and to fail. Because they are on the ground in so many areas of the world, they can swoop in when economic conditions make timely and advantageous deals available. They will be in a much better position than their purely internet-based competitors to offer consumers various channels of distribution, phone, fax, and internet, along with physical stores, a variety that is surely the future of retailing. In fact, that they operate all over the world can be a hedge against normal business cycles as well. In contrast to most internet startups, moreover, established companies already overcome many crises, recessions, currency and stock market debacles, political turmoil in various countries, and they have figured out a way to navigate storms that most of the new economy companies have not yet experienced. Big global companies also have enormous potential to increase their productivity and their profitability. When Ford Motor Company says it wants to reinvent the way an automobile business works, it has the laboratory of an $83 billion annual budget for purchasing supplies and a testbed of 30,000 suppliers. In just a few years, the company aims to save as much as $8 billion from lower-cost supplies and to boost supplier productivity by 10%. GE plans to use the internet to reduce overall administrative costs by 20%, to cut the time of building turbines by 20-30%. Otherwise, and to increase efficiencies throughout the far-flung empire by orders of magnitude. Royal Dutch Shell has used its new international network to locate some 30 million barrels of oil reserves in Africa. Cisco Systems says it can save $500 million per year with online management. Boeing believes end-to-end digital systems will save between 30 and 40% of the cost of building a commercial aircraft. Most traditional multinationals will not be wiped out by the new economy insurgents. Rather, they are likely to be spurred on by them. As Bill Gates writes, quote, "The digital world is forcing companies to react to change and is giving them the tools by which to stay ahead of it," unquote. The companies that supply the new economy with its essential infrastructure, Cisco, Oracle, Microsoft, Intel, are selling primarily to the dot-coms, but also to the traditional blue chips. Many of these companies will look much different a few years from now. Some will be bigger, some more specialized, all increasingly centered on the internet. Many will have linked up with pure internet companies, either by merger, investment, or by some other kind of alliance. No matter what happens in the internet arena, moreover, the physical world won't go away. Someone is going to have to drill for oil and to transport it. Someone will have to grow food and distribute it. Our roads, our ports, our automobiles, our airplanes, our hospitals, our clothing, our food, our household appliances, our energy. The physical companies will surely be made more efficient by embracing the internet. But the new communications medium alone cannot perform these and many other vital functions. Most popular guesses about the internet's commercial future have concentrated on fashionable new companies run by geek billionaires. Dazzlingly rated firms such as Amazon, Yahoo, and eBay that have hogged the limelight editorialized The Economist, quote, "Yet far more significant is the effect the internet will have on established companies. The storm that's arriving," said IBM's Louis Gerstner, "is when the thousands and thousands of institutions that exist today seize the power of this global computing and communications infrastructure and use it to transform themselves. That is the real revolution." And that is what has been happening. Our industry and tools that it creates are really at the center of a whole series of changes that are occurring in the way companies work, and we might be somewhere between 5% and 20% of the way through the conversation. Says Michael Dell, chairman and CEO of Dell Computer Corporation, quote, "So in large part, I think the next 5 years are going to be a lot about taking some of the things that a few companies like ours are experimenting with and really proliferating that across a wide variety of other companies. And that's going to have a pretty profound effect on the way the economy works, the way businesses interact, where companies find real value, and how and to where capital flows. Old line companies are establishing e-commerce marketing links to their customers, allowing more frequent and fluid two-way relationships, an arrangement that provides opportunities for customers to design products, for firms to minimize inventories, and for product service to become much more efficient. They're investing in new economy companies, buying them or merging with them. Most important, they are thinking all about the possibilities of the rapidly evolving internet." Kenneth Chinnow, president and chief operating officer of American Express, thinks of the internet simply as yet another historic transformation of his company. A graduate of Harvard Law School, former consultant with Bain and Company, and a 20-year veteran of American Express, he's been designated to succeed his boss as chairman and CEO in April 2001. Chinnow sat across from me in a conference room adjoining to his office high up in the World Financial Center in New York, with much of the city spread out before us. He described how the company has transformed itself many times in its 150 years of existence, moving from its original mission of being a freight forwarding company into travelers' checks, credit cards, and ultimately a wide range of travel-related and investment services. Now, the company is in e-business as well, allowing its customers to do a variety of transactions online, to check their accounts, pay their bills, make travel arrangements. One thing that's very clear now is that the online world is going to change everything, he said. There will be increasing focus and need for understanding of different distribution channels and the matching of products and services to these channels. In the past, particularly for a consumer-based company, we could afford to focus on one or two distribution channels. Now we will be using a wide variety of these channels. Some regulated, some are highways available to anyone. Some are through third parties. Very few are proprietary. Our customers are going to want to create value out of information we have about them and to personalize our offers to them. To do all of this, we're making major bets on the fusion of the internet business with what we are already doing. We are committing a very high level of financial resources, human resources, and we are preparing again to cannibalize our business when necessary. Some people are asking whether we know how we will make money out of all of this and when. We don't have absolute certainty, but we believe this is a bet that we're going to win eventually. Barnes & Noble's Leonard Riggio had an idea for e-commerce well before most other retailers. We met in his plain conference room on Lower Fifth Avenue at a time when he was under the media spotlight because Amazon.com was emerging as a clear winner for selling books over the internet. Riggio, who began his career in 1958 as a bookstore clerk while he studied engineering in the evenings at New York University, is rightly credited with having revolutionized the concept of the bookstore, turning it from a fairly elitist enterprise to a form of popular entertainment by establishing mega stores where customers could meet and hang out. Despite the lead Amazon.com had gained, Riggio did not appear dismayed when we spoke, and he presented a clear idea of how the game will be played out. Quote, "What I think you have here is ebb and flow. Revolution followed by counter-revolution," unquote, he told me. Ultimately, what will happen is that some people are calling the revenge of the brick-and-mortar people. You will see the merger of the revolution and the counter-revolution, and you're going to see the big e-commerce practitioners and traditional retailers emerging. Maybe one will have to break the other, but we're going to come together. Retail business will change. Of course, the internet will add incrementally to sales, but it will not replace traditional sales. Suppose you sold 10 billion worth of books. Then the internet comes along. Then you'll probably have 12 billion sold, 5 billion on the internet, 7 billion from the stores. So there's going to be fewer stores, plain and simple, and they will be spaced much further apart. And the ownership of both stores and online business will be the same. And then the stores can be more flexible. Fewer stores, some big, some small, and big distribution centers across the tracks where the rent is cheap. And we put portals in the stores so that whatever you want to buy off the shelf, you can. But if you want a tap, tap, tap on the keyboard and order the rest and ship it home, you can do that as well. In late 2000, Riggio was still trying to find the right formula to link his 550 stores and brand name to e-commerce. BarnesandNoble.com, owned 40% by Barnes & Noble, announced an agreement with Yahoo, replacing Amazon.com on that popular website. Barnes & Noble said it intends to sell books, music, and videos through the Yahoo network. James Wolfensohn, president of the World Bank, has embraced the internet with a vengeance. Formerly the founder and chief executive of prestigious investment bank that bore his name, He has also been the chairman of both Carnegie Hall and the John F. Kennedy Center for the Performing Arts. The hallway leading to his spacious office in downtown Washington, where we met, is lined with his own art collection. Wolfenson told me that what he called the World Bank's System Learning Facility was a conference room with multiple screens. He described how the World Bank had used the internet. Quote, we have just run a course for 7 African countries, 5 participants each, on the subject of corruption in government, unquote. He described how the internet allows this kind of instruction to take place in cyberspace, not just between Washington and the officials of one country, but among the World Bank and several countries at the same time. Quote, if you do that for investigative journalists, which we've done, or help parliamentarians around the world to better understand the democratic process, or give farmers extension courses, or highway builders information they need, or people in villages help to construct new sewage facilities, think of what you can achieve, unquote, he said. Wolfenson talked about transforming his organization into what he calls a knowledge bank that would house the experience of the World Bank that has had in mounting projects all over the world. Anyone wishing to find out how an urban planning project was handling Bombay, for example, could find out with a click of the mouse. Wolfenson was also using the internet to link up experts from around the world in areas such as civil engineering or education so that they could share experiences. We get a sense that the revolution in knowledge and the ability to store it and access it and then distribute it in multiple languages changes the pace at which you can transmit it, but also gather it because it's two-way. You have the possibility of enormous gains. This is not pie in the sky. This is today. The integration of the virtual and physical worlds is happening in industry after industry. In the late 1990s, for example, firms like Merrill Lynch and Morgan Stanley Dean Witter were seen as dinosaurs, easy prey for upstarts like Ameritrade or E-Trade, who invented trading online. But by mid-2000, projections showed that the 6 full-line service. You are listening to CJSF 90.1 FM on your dial, 93.9 cable FM in Burnaby, and you are listening to Future Talk with your host, Dr. Paul Tenery, Instructor of Future Studies at Simon Fraser University. We're now going to take a short break and listen to a very important public service announcement.
With thousands of homeless animals entering SPCA shelters each year, pet overpopulation is a serious problem in BC, but it's one you can help prevent. Spay or neuter your companion animal today. From our perspective, every homeless animal on our streets or in our shelters is one too many. For more information on spaying and neutering initiatives, visit the BC SPCA website at www.spca.bc.ca.
Welcome back. You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, 93.9 cable FM in Burnaby. And you are listening to Future Talk with your host, Dr. Paul Tenery, professional futurist.
Brokers, including Merrill and Morgan Stanley, would have more online accounts by the end of the year than all the 100-plus e-brokers combined. While more customers are using the internet to trade, they want to combine the ease of execution with advice from a seasoned broker. Most of these new customers aren't day traders, but are conservative investors. The e-brokers, in response, are adding investment advice to their portfolio of services. But this transition is proving more difficult for them than going the other way was for Merrill Lynch et al. Put another way, e-business is becoming mainstream for the brokerage business. Automobiles are another example of the marriage of bricks and clicks. In the mid-2000s, Daimler Chrysler was considered an e-business laggard. Then it initiated what could be called a counterattack against internet sites like autobytel.com, carsdirect.com, by establishing websites that would allow customers to configure cars online and search dealer inventories for cars that they might want to buy. Meanwhile, the internet would link auto dealers with one another to better control overall inventory, match customer needs more efficiently, and lower the cost of office supplies by aggregating purchases to get discounts. This move was a huge leap for the company, but only the beginning of many more internet innovations. In the retailing industry, the virtual and physical worlds are coming together as well. An interesting example occurred last August when Toys R Us and Amazon.com, once fierce rivals, announced plans to merge their online toy sales and concentrate separately on what they do best. The traditional toy company will coordinate the selection, purchasing, and inventory management, while Amazon will handle distribution and customer service. By the summer of 2000, moreover, the overall impact of pure e-tailers on the business environment had failed to live up to expectations of a number of celebrated forecasters. According to the Financial Times, just three companies, Amazon.com, eBay, and Priceline.com, accounted for 90% of the market value of the entire U.S. e-commerce retail sector. Total online sales were projected to amount to just 2% of the retail market, a third of the sales made by traditional catalog companies. And by the end of 2000, none of this should be interpreted as portending the demise or even the slowing down of online retailing. Far from it. The implication is that more and more e-commerce will be done by traditional firms with the infrastructure for customer service, fulfilling orders, handling exchanges of unwanted products, and so on, and using the internet as one of several channels of distribution. Beyond the way companies are using the internet to serve customers, progress has also been made as virtual marketplaces allow for more efficient transactions between producers and suppliers and the business-to-business or the B2B market. In 1998, there were virtually no B2B electronic businesses. By 2003, however, the volume was expected to approach $2.5 to $4 trillion. Thus, Ford, General Motors, and Daimler Chrysler are experimenting with pooling resources that create dot-com startups to streamline the process of procurement on some $250 billion of purchases each year. The exchange will not only cut the cost of supplies, but will handle currency conversions and keep track of export regulations. The cascading impact on suppliers and their suppliers is not possible to estimate. But a radically new and more efficient purchasing system is being born. Ultimately, the benefits will accrue not only to the auto company's bottom line, but also to customers who will be able to order specific models with their own selections of options online or off, and be able to do it much more quickly. Other industries and firms are trying to follow similar paths. Sears, Roebuck & Company, and French retailer Cofour SA are joining forces to create the largest e-commerce supply exchange for their industry. Procter & Gamble, Nestle, H.J. Heinz, and other consumer product companies, some 50 altogether, are creating an internet marketplace as well. The same phenomena can be seen in industries such as steel, energy, aerospace, chemicals, banking, and healthcare. Even the U.S. farm sector is deep into e-commerce as companies like Cargill and DuPont join forces to create an electronic marketplace. Many of these new marketplaces will fail, either for technological reasons or possibly because of antitrust violations. Many are sure to move ahead in one form or another, and these efforts ought to be seen merely as a small part of what established multinational companies are doing to use technology in order to revolutionize their businesses. Big companies are rapidly ramping up their efforts to embrace the internet in other ways, investing in startups, established dot-com subsidiaries, creating in-house venture funds to finance e-business proposals from their workers. Even quintessentially new economy companies like Dell Computer are investing in other companies to maximize their involvement in innovative ventures. In Dell's case, there are over 80 such ventures now underway. In addition, big companies are turning to newly formed groups for help in integrating the internet into their present businesses or creating innovative business structures to maximize the effectiveness and the value of their internet operations. Accel Partners, a U.S. venture capital firm, has teamed up with McKinsey & Company and the leveraged buyout firm Kloberg Kravis Roberts to provide such services. Goldman Sachs, the Boston Consulting Group, and the venture capital firm General Atlantic Partners have formed iFormation to do the same for clients. There are lots of inflated projections concerning the change that the internet will bring, but you need not rely on them to get a good sense of what is happening throughout the economy. In the first half of 2000, investment in high-tech industries in the United States soared at an annualized pace of 3 times the rate of total business investment. This happened at a time when the bubble burst for pure internet companies, deflating the value of many of them to a small percentages of their original market values, and creating financing problems for most of them. It's a good bet that the internet-driven phase of American growth, in which the new communications technology is spreading rapidly throughout the old economy, have only just begun. By the spring of 2000, it was becoming clear that investors were applying more traditional criteria for evaluating the dot-coms than had been the case previously. Investors were concluding that online companies would need to be judged by the same standards as their offline rivals, by profits and cash flow, and not just by growth at any cost. All of this coincided with the realization on Wall Street and among internet company executives that as companies grow, traditional management questions arise relating to organizations, human resources, financial planning, and real estate acquisition. Internet companies were searching desperately for managers who had traditional business experience to plan strategies and to manage growth. By the fall of 2000, many of the new economy icons were badly tarnished. Microsoft and Intel had lost huge percentages of market capitalization, and the business models of Amazon, Priceline, Yahoo, and eBay were increasingly questioned by financial analysts and investors for their long-term viability. We're going to be looking at this and new insights into the world of the future CEO in upcoming shows, so please stay tuned.
You have been listening to Future Talk on CJSF 90.1 FM on your dial, 93.9 cable FM in Burnaby, and Future Talk is a weekly show on important issues that affect you and your future. And this is Dr. Teneri, professional futurist, reminding you that if you're not willing to make the effort to invent your own future, then others will be only too happy to invent it for you. See you next week.
CJSF Radio, Simon Fraser, 90.1 FM.
Thank you for listening to CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting to you live from Burnaby Mountain.
Hello and welcome to Viewpoints on today's show. Many Canadians will do